Well, thank you very much. It's indeed an honor and a very humbling honor, I should say, to share the podium with Nobel Peace Prize winner and World Food Prize founder and hero to all of us in this room, Dr. Norman Borlaug. I never imagined being able to do this, and I doubt I'll ever have an opportunity like this again. But it's really not a personal honor. It's an honor that recognizes what I think's an event of major importance for people, for agriculture, for food and nutrition. The recognition by the largest philanthropic foundation in the world, also one of the newest, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, that agriculture is fundamentally important to the lives of all of us on Earth, but especially to the poorest of us on Earth. The underlying value statement of the foundation, which is a reflection of the founders and chairs, that all lives have equal value, and that everyone should have the opportunity to live a healthy and productive life. Now, I only have known about the foundation for about the last 2 years, but it started in the year 2000 and had an initial focus on global health. And what I think happened was the health people figured out that diseases, while really an acute problem that impacted the health of the poor just disproportionately to the cost it would take to save them, was the biggest single thing, but not the only essential thing. And that nutrition followed on after diseases as just a major health issue, especially for the poor. And when delving into a strategy to deal with the nutritional aspects of health, I think the foundation leadership discovered that agriculture was absolutely critical to adequate nutrition, and that together, a healthy agriculture, healthy food and good nutrition, and adequate control of the major infectious diseases would actually make a much more solid base for advancing the well-being of all lives on the earth. I want to spend a few minutes and talk about specifically the charter of the new division that I joined about a year ago, the Global Development Division of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, that is set up as a second division to complement the global health. The global development is looking at a number of things that have to do with development, including financial services for the poor, special initiatives that are starting out looking at water, sanitation, and hygiene, but will also cover other aspects of health and well-being, and agricultural development. I think that agriculture will be the largest part of the Global Development Division. And in a very straightforward and just simple logic, agricultural development is organized around four themes. Now, the sort of starting way upstream is my part, the science and technology portfolio of grants. But actually, we're starting more downstream. We're starting with the market access program of grants to help connect farmers to markets, primarily markets that they can sell into, but also markets that they can buy seeds, fertilizers, and other things that they need from. The second is connecting farmers to the tools that they need. Farmer productivity is what we call the second part of the agricultural development portfolio. And that includes access to extension services, knowledge, and learning systems, as well as access to inputs like good quality seeds and fertilizer and other tools for integrated crop management or integrated pest management. The third is a smaller part that includes increasing the quality of data about what's happening in the world and who it's happening to, data on who's hungry, why they're hungry, how that the weather, how pests and diseases, how soil fertility issues overlay with where the hunger and poverty problems are, and then the ability to track that over time and to use that data to inform grant making and policy making decisions. And the final is science and technology. In science and technology, we've organized around five basic areas of investment. And it's surprisingly similar to the system that Dr. Borlaug and his colleagues that are currently in the CGIAR system use. Actually, it's not surprising at all. It was a very successful and logical framework, so it's not at all surprising that we've adopted the same basic one, which is looking at centralized pre-breeding kinds of science and technology to advance the germplasm base that feeds into the second platform, which is local adaptive breeding, to make finished varieties that farmers can test and grow. We have a third area, which is to look at specific traits that would feed either into the end breeding or the pre-breeding, whether they be biotechnology traits or specialized wide cross or marker-assisted breeding development of traits. The third is a cross-cutting bucket of kind of whatever is needed in terms of things like disease diagnostics or new strategies for integrated crop management or integrated pest management. And the last is a set of small competitive grants that will be available to scientists who submit ideas, testable ideas of relevance to smallholder farmer needs in developing countries. And that last area is meant to cover those things that you can't really anticipate or know ahead of time this is what's going to be needed, but really open it up to a wide diversity of ideas as to that we might not have thought of in Seattle ahead of time. Let me mention a few themes that will guide how the decisions are made, how the grants are managed in these areas, and go back to a quote that I've heard from Dr. Borlaug a number of times, which is, you can't eat potential. One of the core themes in how grants are designed and how grants are managed after they're awarded will be to always keep asking the grantees the questions, how does this reach the farmers? How does this help the farmers? And then after the theory is put out there and tested, we'll be measuring to find out how does it help the farmers? And then learn and adjust as we go. There's going to be a time dimension to the portfolio of grants in agricultural science and technology. We're going to start with the shorter term, and I'll call it finish and deliver kind of applications, where a lot of the work's already been done, but it hasn't been finished, and it's not available to farmers. So we're going to look for those opportunities to finish and deliver work that's already started, but it hasn't been supported well enough or at a large enough scale to have the impact that it's capable of. The middle will be a set of workhorse projects that really are just time and effort. You put a hard enough effort for a reasonable period of time, there's a good likelihood that you'll crank out results that matter. And that's actually the crux of breeding. You pretty much know if you just work away with a good enough germplasm base and a good enough selection, you're going to come out with better varieties over time. And then the longer term part of the portfolio will be higher risk, higher reward, and longer term, we're calling them Apollo kind of ideas. And let me give you an example, just one example, and then I'm going to close for the person we're all really here to hear tonight, Dr. Borlaug. And it's one of his ideas, and it illustrates actually combining all three time dimensions in a single major project. And I'm sure Dr. Borlaug will mention the threat of rust in wheat emerging now in the last decade after about 50 years of breeding, keeping ahead of the pathogen. And a group that Dr. Borlaug has put together is compiling a proposal to do a body of work that includes all three time dimensions, looking at the short-term needs as the more virulent strains of the rust are moving from Africa to Yemen and beyond, to say what can be finished and delivered as quickly as possible to slow down the spread and to help farmers who are in the path of the spread. The workhorse time and effort breeding work that Ravi at CIMMYT and his colleagues are doing to keep looking for new sources of resistance, get them into the leading varieties. There are some sources of resistance that can be brought into cultivars of wheat that farmers could use in a fairly reasonable time frame, and we're going to support that as well. But then the Apollo project part of this, looking for novel sources of resistance from species like rice, which don't get rust, or more widely diverse species related to wheat that haven't been tapped yet, may give a more durable source. I want to close with a plea, a request, a suggestion that as wonderful it is that that this new and financially powerful foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, as wonderful as it is that they have recognized that agriculture is really key to hunger and poverty and human well-being, it's going to take a much bigger effort than a single foundation can bring to bear. And one of my hopes is that the recognition of this foundation coming into this area can be used to spur a revitalization of interest of governments, of other private philanthropists, and of the multilateral bodies like the World Bank to continue what has started over the last few years, where we've seen a little bit of upsurge in the interest of agriculture again. We need to find the ways to keep that going to make it really continue, increase the pace of its continuance. The investment in agricultural science and technology is one of the highest return on investment things that we can do to help hunger and poverty issues. The World Development Report that just came out cites a whole bunch of studies over the last several decades with returns on investments of over 40% per year of research investments in agriculture. It's a very powerful area to invest in, a very important one. So let me close going back to Dr. Borlaug's charge, you can't eat potential. We have to make sure that this potential gets converted to reality. The new varieties, the new integrated crop growing methods, better tools delivered to farmers and converted into food. Thank you.